Hey folks, this is S3E9. This is a very special episode of Fanacheck. I know I've said that before, but I've always been lying. This time I actually mean it. Really cool. So I had an opportunity to spend some time on the phone with Duke Vincent. Duke Vincent, if you don't know him, look him up. He was a producing partner for Aaron Spelling. So earlier this season, I did a great episode on Aaron Spelling, and you should go back and listen to it. Mr. Spelling is the most prolific producer in television history. I mean, he's literally in the Guinness Book of World Records for that. And for a lot of those years, his producing partner was a gentleman named E. Duke Vincent. So the way this came about was, Duke Vincent is a friend of my wife's family. So my wife's grandfather was a Broadway actor, also one of the producers of the Ed Sullivan Show. His nephew is Duke Vincent. Duke went out to California, made it big in TV. And over the years that the family, that side of the family would get to visit sets. Like my wife's been to the Melrose Place set when she was younger, and her mom had been to the Dynasty set in the '80s. And that's just always been kind of in the background. I never thought I'd have an opportunity to speak with him. He is currently 93 years old. He lives in Montecito. He's an author now, and he was kind enough to take a call with me. So yesterday, Easter Sunday, I'm in the car. I get a call from my wife's uncle. Basically says, "Hey, I just spoke to Duke. He wants to talk to you, but you have to call him right now." And I'm like, well, I'm in a car with my family and it's Easter. I can't really record a podcast right now, but I'll call him. So I called Duke and he was friendly and he said, you know what, call me back tomorrow at a specific time. He gave me the time and I called him, we recorded it and he gave me 24 minutes. It was pretty fun. So let me give you a quick, you know, a quick background on who Duke Vincent is. So he was born Edward Ventimiglia on April 30th, 1932 in Jersey City, New Jersey. He went to Seton Hall University and after that he joined the Navy. He wasn't just any kind of a Navy pilot. This guy was a Blue Angel. How about that? He was a Blue Angel for 2 years. I've never had the opportunity to speak to a Blue Angel before, and I'm a Navy man myself. Thought that was really, really cool. So he got out of the Navy like you do and started writing for television. So we're going to talk about it, but he started writing for a show called Good Morning World, and he worked with Carl Reiner on that. Imagine your first writing project. This is it. This is his introduction into television in Hollywood. He's working with Carl Reiner, and we're going to talk about that and go on and on and on, so I don't want to spoil it. But so he started from there. He eventually linked up with Aaron Spelling, and he had a 40-year career in television as a writer and producer. He was a partner with Aaron Spelling and an exec at various different Spelling production company entities. He's been a novelist since 2006. He lives in Montecito, California, with his wife, actress Pamela Hensley. And he's got some big hits. I mean, we're going to talk about him. I mean, he's responsible for co-producing shows like Vegas, Matt Houston, Dynasty, Hotel, The Heights, 90210, Merrill's Place, Models, Inc., Seventh Heaven, Charmed. And we're going to talk a lot about that. We're going to touch on some of the actors he worked with, some of the shows he worked on, how they were so loyal to their actors, getting started, meeting Aaron. And here you go. I hope you enjoy my conversation with Mr. E. Duke Vincent.
Vincent.
Hey, Mr. Vincent, this is Blair. We spoke yesterday.
Oh, yes. How are you?
I am good. Is this still a good time to talk?
Yes. Go ahead.
Excellent. Well, you know, like I said, I was hoping to just have an interview with you that I could put on the podcast just to celebrate your career and talk about some of the projects you worked on. I mean, you're obviously had a legendary television career, and was hoping I could talk to you for a few minutes.
Sure. Go ahead.
Excellent. Well, you and I have some things in common. You know, you're from the Northeast. You're from New Jersey. I grew up in the Bronx. I was in the Navy as well. I was on submarines. Of course, you were a Blue Angel. That's amazing. How long were you in the Navy?
I was in the Navy actually for, let's see, from the time I was in the reserves, probably a little over 10 years.
Wow. Okay. I was in the Navy about 9 years. And how many of those years were you a Blue Angel?
Two.
Wow. That's incredible. That's amazing. You're the first Blue Angel I've ever spoken with, so it's an honor. Now, I have to ask, how does a Blue Angel go from being a Blue Angel to all of a sudden, in 1967, you're writing for Good Morning World and working with Carl Reiner? How did that transition happen?
Well, I was always, you know, as I grew up, I was always writing. Not professionally, but I was always interested in writing. And as time went on, it got to the point where I started writing articles. And those articles gave me a background until one day I found out that I was actually being hired to do a television show.
So you didn't even know, huh?
Well, you know, it happened almost accidentally because I had met some people who I knew, and they were in television. And they said, have you ever thought about writing for television? I said, no, I never thought about that. But then they said, okay, why don't we try and see if you can do that? So I said, fine, and away we went.
And yes, so I know you wrote 6 episodes of Good Morning World. I mean, you've worked with lots of legendary people. What was it like working with Carl Reiner?
Well, Reiner was a genius. There's no question about that. He mentored many, many, many people. But probably the thing I remember most about Carl, in addition to, you know, his obvious ability was the fact that he was hysterical. You couldn't be in a room with him for more than 10 minutes before you were on the floor.
Right. Yeah, he's a legendary comedian, comedic writer, absolutely. Did you work pretty closely with him? Was he a hands-on producer?
He was, yes. He was a hands-on producer. When we worked together, we became close friends, and it was probably one of the most fun times in my life.
I bet. Were you intimidated at all working with him?
Pardon?
Were you intimidated at all, being so new to the industry and working with Carl Reiner?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
You could not be. I mean, you were dead if you were not intimidated by Carl.
Oh, my gosh. And then from there, you know, you continued writing. I know you worked on the Doris Day Show. You started producing as well. You did Gomer Pyle, which I grew up watching. I loved Gomer Pyle. Then you did the Jim Nabors Hour. So is it safe to assume you had a pretty good relationship with Jim Nabors?
Oh, sure. No, Jim and I became very close. I'm trying to think of the right words to use. Jim was a very intriguing guy. What's the best way to put it? He was extremely talented. He knew he was talented. And he loved every minute of everything he ever did. And he was very personable. And, I mean, going out to dinner with Jim was a real joy.
I bet. He always seemed like such a nice guy. You don't hear too many bad things about Jim Nabors at all.
Well, there was really nothing bad to say about him.
Yeah. And he was a great singer as well. Didn't he sing?
Oh, yeah. He sang. He was a beautiful singer.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, I grew up watching Gomer Pyle. I loved Jim Nabors as a kid. Of course, I was watching him in the reruns, but I love Jim Nabors. You know, and going through your resume and your credits, it looks like you link up with Aaron Spelling, I guess, right around 77, huh, with the San Pedro Beach Bums. Was that your first project with him?
That was the first one, yeah. We actually got together almost by accident. I was introduced to him by a friend of his, and he said, have you been doing any writing for television? I said, well, a little bit. He said, well, I've got a show that you might be interested in. Take a look at this one. And we got together, and that was the beginning of the San Pedro Beach Bums and my association with Aaron Spelling, which lasted the rest of our lives.
Right. Right. And the San Pedro Beach Bums, so you guys did a lot of this where you would do pilots, like as a TV movie that would serve as a pilot. San Pedro Beach Bums got picked up. I think it lasted 10 episodes, but you had some serious guest stars on those 10 episodes. I was looking it up. Arnold Schwarzenegger, Dee Wallace, all the Charlie's Angels actresses, Herb Edelman, Regis Philbin. I mean, what a great run for 10 episodes.
It was really great. And it was a lot of fun to do. The show basically wasn't a hit, but we had a great time doing it and made some great relationships during that show.
Yeah, I bet. That's got to be a very early Arnold Schwarzenegger credit as well.
I think it was one of his earliest.
Yeah, he didn't do, I think he, yeah, he hadn't done much. I know sometime in the late 70s, I think he did that Hercules in New York movie, but that had to be a very early credit. And again, I love that you had the Charlie's Angels actresses in there, because that's one thing that I noticed about the work that you guys did together. You were very loyal to your actors. You used a lot of the same actors in different projects. Was that always very important to you guys?
Oh, yeah. It was extremely important for a myriad of reasons. Number one, for the publicity we got for doing it. And number two, because all of those actresses had tremendous followings. So we gained from both sides.
Right. No, for sure. I mean, and yet, and it was iconic. Some of those actors became just iconic. I mean, unbelievable. So, I mean, with the work you did with Spelling, I mean, just, you know, I don't think anyone's ever been more prolific than you guys with Vegas and Matt Houston. I mean, talk to me about Las Vegas. I believe you worked on that show, correct?
Oh, yeah.
And what was it like working with Robert Urich? He was always one of my favorites when I was a kid.
Robert Urich was one of the nicest human beings I've ever met on the face of this earth. He was a terrific actor. He was a great guy. And we were, you know, the show was a big success. So we enjoyed each other's company for the rest of our lives.
Yeah, I grew up watching him on... I was a little young for Vegas, although I've seen it. I watched, you know, Spencer for Hire as a kid. And then I remember you guys brought Robert Urich back, I think, when you did the new Love Boat. I think he was the captain, if I'm not mistaken.
That's exactly right.
Right, yeah. And again, more loyalty. I love that. You guys kept working with the same actors. You know, and as we look into the 80s, you know, Matt Houston. But how about Dynasty? I mean, gosh, you guys changed the face of nighttime soaps. You may have even invented the genre. I don't know if there was a nighttime soap before you guys made Dynasty.
There might have been, I don't remember, but Dynasty obviously was a tremendous hit.
So I'll tell you a funny story. So I know a woman who was invited to visit the set one day when you guys were doing Dynasty. And at the last second, someone wanted to check and make sure if she was attractive or not. And it turns out she was attractive. And they said, well, then let's not have her come because we don't want to upset Joan Collins. I guess Joan Collins didn't like when another attractive woman visited the set.
Joan was a unique personality. I don't know any other word to describe her. She was talented. She was beautiful. She was a little eccentric, and I mean, you couldn't get in her way, so to speak.
Sure. So, you know, I'm going through some of the credits, you know, and you work with so many people. Someone that I'm actually going to have on the show later. I'm not sure if you remember him or not, but he his name was Larry Hankin. He was actually on that show At Ease that you produced. He was a character actor, but he's going to be on my podcast here soon as well. So I got that tickled me a little bit to see that you produced At Ease. But, you know, I did an episode before where I was talking about the actor Eric Hexum. And I know
what's his name?
Eric Hexum. He was in The Making of a Male Model. I don't know if you remember. He's the one who accidentally shot himself on set.
Oh, yes. Now I didn't recognize the name at first.
Yes.
Now I remember. Yes.
Yeah. How about that? I was talking. And actually, you know, Making of a Male Model was also with Joan Collins. So there you go. I didn't even realize that. But yeah, I was talking about that. I mean, he had a promising career and he was messing around with a gun on set and shot himself.
No, I remember. That was a huge tragedy.
Yeah. That's a mess. But so you go from Dynasty to Hotel. And again, I don't want to breeze through this stuff. I don't want to keep it too long because I know you're being very kind. But in the 90s, I mean, after this amazing career anyway, in the 90s, I feel like that's when you guys almost just took it to a next level with 90210. Did you see that coming? Did you see how you guys were going to just have such a cultural impact with that show?
Absolutely not. We, as a matter of fact, there was a huge discussion as to whether or not we should even do 90210.
Wow.
And we talked about it, and I said, well, what the hell? Why not? So a lot of the actors on that show were already well-known. They were, well, I shouldn't say, you know, they weren't stars, but we knew who they were.
Sure.
And So we talked about it and talked about it and talked about it. We said, ah, well, what the hell, why not? And it turns out to be this enormous hit. And one, I remember we were having dinner one night, Aaron and I, and Candy and my wife, Pam. And the girls asked us, they said, do you guys have any idea how big a hit that was going to be? We said, are you kidding? We discussed whether or not we were going to do it.
Wow. I mean, that show, it blew up instantly. I mean, it had such a huge impact. You know, there were dolls, posters. I mean, those, yeah, and you're right. A lot of them had been working. Like, I remember recognizing Shannon Doherty. She'd had a show called Our House with Wilford Brimley. Jason Priestley was coming off of Sister Kate. Obviously, Tori, I think at the same time was doing, I think, Saved by the Bell around the same time.
Yeah,
and so we knew some of that. I think Luke Perry was new. I don't think anyone of us recognized Luke Perry. That was, and he became just such a breakout star as well. It was sad to lose him.
No, Luke really became huge.
Yeah, I had the privilege of spending some time with him several years ago. Back in 2005, he and I had a mutual friend in Los Angeles, and we were visiting her and watching her in a play, and I got to hang out with Luke for the afternoon, and what a humble, just a humble, nice guy. And it made me really sad when we lost him several years ago. He was a young man.
Yes, he was.
So to have 90210 be this huge cultural and just a monster show, and then from that you spin off arguably maybe your second biggest show. I mean, Melrose Place. I mean, how big was that?
Well, actually, in many ways, it was bigger.
Oh, really?
Yeah, mainly because the audience was more, for want of a better word, more sophisticated. It was an older audience than originally we had on 90210. So from our point of view, it was, you know, even more exciting.
I bet. And I remember, you know, because again, at this point, because I'm 46 years old now, so at that point I was a teenager. 90210 is huge. Melrose Place is premiering, and we all tuned in, and we liked it. We liked it, but I'll never forget when that show changed was when you guys brought in Heather Locklear, and oh boy,
that did it
overnight. Different show, just different show.
No question about it. And by the way, we didn't really see that coming.
Really?
No, we knew. We knew she was going to be big. I mean, it was obviously a girl with a lot of talent. But the show, you know, at that point, was not a runaway hit. We brought her aboard, and the show exploded.
Yeah. I remember. And the show changed a bit, too. It definitely became a bit darker, you know, yeah, I mean, she changed the whole tone of the show too. And she and Aaron had worked together, right? With William Shatner. I forget the name of the show.
Yes, I forget it too. Oh, but boy. You're right.
Yeah, gosh, I'm embarrassed. Miller? No, gosh, but that. Yeah, so she'd been working, and I thought Aaron Spelling had produced that, but yeah. So I mean, obviously, she was a big name, but she came in and just changed the face of that show. And yeah, I mean, that was huge. I mean, you guys made up the 90s. And then from there, there's some other stuff, Models, Inc. and Savannah. Let's talk about Seventh Heaven. You know, what a shift. So to have shows like 90210, Melrose Place, which, you know, did tackle more adult topics and that. Then you go from that to Seventh Heaven. Was that a specific choice? Like you wanted to do more of a faith-based or family-based show?
It was. We decided to do a show... Excuse me, that was a little more unusual, and we had a lot of good people around us at that point. And again, I'm not sure that anybody realized how big a hit that show would be, because again, it was a faith-based show.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and that show had breakout stars as well. I think particularly Jessica Biel. You know,
yeah,
she became a big star pretty quickly. Yeah. I think Seventh Heaven snuck up on even the audiences. I don't think anyone saw that coming as being a big hit. And it ended up being a really big hit. It lasted a long time. Great show too. And I did breeze over one thing that I want to go back to. It kind of makes me laugh the success you had in a roundabout way with The Heights. I'll never forget when The Heights came out. Oh, I mean, because again, I'm a teenager during this. So The Heights had all this press. The show came and the show disappeared pretty quickly. But that song did not. That song was a monster.
It was huge.
I think I read somewhere that the song went number one the day the show got canceled. I feel like they were there on the same day.
I think it was exactly that.
Yeah. And then again, in showing your loyalty, though, that actor, one of the main actors, I can't remember his name, I apologize, but he joined the cast of 90210 for several years there. He played Tori's boyfriend. So again, you know, I love the fact you guys are loyal using the same actors, but yeah, my friends and I used to laugh. I was like, well, I don't remember that show, The Heights, at all, but that song has withstood the test of time. Hopefully you guys were able to make some money off of that because that was a monster.
It was huge.
Yeah. But, so speaking of using the same actors and, you know, I got to talk about, obviously, one thing that was really big in the press with 90210 was that Shannon Doherty was famously let go. She was known as being difficult on set. But then years later, you guys would bring her back in Charmed. And I thought that was interesting. So I would love to learn about that. What was the rationale behind, okay, we had a bad experience with her before, or maybe you didn't, I don't know. But what led to the decision to bring Shannon Doherty back and work with her again?
Talent.
Yeah. Yeah, she's a talented girl.
She's obviously a very talented girl.
Yeah.
We'd had a problem. She had a problem. That problem was gone. We saw the ability to use her again, and it didn't take more than a minute to figure that one out.
Yeah, and that show became a monster hit too. You know, and you know, obviously with pairing her with Alyssa Milano, just wow, that was huge. And what led her leaving Charmed?
Pardon?
What led to Shannon Doherty leaving Charmed?
Well, again, talent. You know, when you see someone's ability and you see your need and your ability to use that talent, it doesn't take long to figure that out.
Right. Did she leave the show on good terms when she left Charmed or no?
Not really.
I'm sorry to hear that. Yeah. And, you know, she's battling cancer now. So I hope we're all praying for her. We hope she does well.
Well, we all do. You know, at the end of the day, she was a nice girl.
Was she?
Yes.
Good, good, good. Yeah, very talented. And you guys worked with her too on, I think when you remade Satan School for Girls. Wasn't she the lead in that? I think she was.
Yes, she was.
Yeah. I love it. I love the loyalty. So if you don't mind me asking, because I know, you know, your time is important to you, looking at this career, I mean, you've worked with so many legendary people. Who are some of your favorites that you worked with?
Well, you know, if I do that, I'm going to piss off a lot of people.
Okay. Understood.
So, I mean, obviously, I really enjoyed everybody that we worked with. There's no question about that. But if I start calling out favors, I'm going to get a lot of mail.
I understand. Let me ask about one specific one. You got to work with Lucille Ball.
Oh, my God.
What was that like?
Well, you know, it's like asking, what was it like to work with a legend?
Yeah.
Lucille Ball was a legend long before I came along. And we became friends, and I mean, I'll never forget working, you know, we worked on a set, we worked three camera.
Okay.
You remember that?
Yes, sir.
And so we worked on the set very closely during that show, and I was crushed that it didn't become a hit, because she was probably one of the most unbelievably fabulous people I've ever met in my entire life.
Yeah, and she was such an innovator too with what she did. When, you know, even when they were doing the original I Love Lucy, some of the decisions they made with Desi Lu and the reruns and their production company. I mean, she was way ahead of her time. And from what I understand, she did not suffer fools. I heard she was pleasant, but she must have been a tough lady too. She knew what she wanted.
Oh yeah, I mean, that was in a whole story when they talked about Lucy, and they said, well, "What can you tell us about Lucy?" And my answer was, "Don't get in her way."
Yeah, don't get Lucille Ball's way. Absolutely not. No, she was a. Yeah, I can imagine that. That must have been amazing to work with her. How about any shows? Of all these shows, I mean, you must think of them as babies. I mean, you must love them all like they're children. But do you have any favorite projects? Anything that you know that you'd like to be remembered by? If you could say, like, this is the one or two shows that I really want my name associated with. Do you have any in mind?
Well, I can tell you which one was one of my favorites was Vegas.
Yeah, it's a good show.
And I mean, I loved the action adventure. I loved the cast, and we just had a hell of a good time doing it. And of course, it was a very, very interesting place to shoot a show.
I bet. I mean, yeah. And during that time too, what I loved about those shows, like, you know, Vegas or the Rockford Files and Starsky and Hutch, they always had a cool car. And I feel like Robert Urich had a cool car in that show. I don't remember what it was, but I remember as a kid.
I think it was a Thunderbird, wasn't it?
I think it might have been, yeah. And I mean, it was. You're right. It was a really cool show, and you're filming in Las Vegas. Wow, that's wild. That's fun stuff. Well, you know, that's all I had, Mr. Vincent. I just wanted to take up a little bit of your time and have a conversation. The last thing I'd like to say is just thank you. You know, the work you did, you brought thousands and thousands and thousands of hours of entertainment to people, to me specifically. I grew up watching a lot of the stuff you worked on, and it's been an honor and a pleasure talking to you.
Well, I'm delighted to have been of help to you, and I wish you all the best.
Thank you, sir. Good luck, and we'll talk soon, hopefully.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. Wow, that was pretty cool. That was definitely a highlight for me, not only for the podcast, but honestly in my life. I don't think I've ever had an opportunity to speak to someone that responsible for so much television history and that wealthy, quite frankly. I really, really want to thank my wife and her folks for setting that up. That was really, really kind of them. That was basically a gift for me. I want to thank Mr. Vincent for giving me that time so generously, but also, you know what? Just want to thank him for all the endless hours of entertainment, which I thanked him for when I spoke to him. I mean, you know, TV was like a surrogate parent for me, and a lot of those shows were very important to me. That means Mr. Vincent's very important to me. So that was S3E9. So hey, if you like the podcast, you know, hit me up on Twitter at Fanacek Podcast. You can also hit me up on Facebook, Real Fanacek. I'm on email. Like they say, I'm on the email, fanacekpodcast@gmail.com. And as always, I need you to stay tuned for the next exciting episode of Fanacek.